Okay, hi, it's me. I'm late. I know, I'm supposed to get this out Friday morning. I'm late. It's Friday evening. Maybe it's even Saturday morning. I don't know when you're listening to this, but I have a really good excuse as to why the podcast is late this week, and I'm very excited to tell you about it. It's a really good excuse. I promise. I have a really, really, really good reason why the podcast is late. But let's start off with our intro from a makeshift recording studio in a hotel room in St. George, Utah. It's People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. It's just me today. Hello. I had guests all lined up, ready to go, the best guests, primo guests on my show, ready to record yesterday, and we got interrupted. But let's talk about why I'm in a hotel room first. I'm down here in St. George, Utah. I'm in a hotel room. I got my gear with me. I got my microphone. I'm live on TikTok right now. We got TikTok here. Hello, TikTok. We got people popping in, saying things. Hi, hi, hi. Somebody just said, in the most respectful way, you're so attractive. That makes me feel good. You could say that in a disrespectful way. If you were like, in the most disrespectful way, you're so hot, I'd be like, I would accept that also as a compliment. If you were like, all disrespect intended, I am so horny for you, I would be like, sick, cool. Like, that's great. I'm here in St. George, Utah in this hotel. I'm going to be here for the next 7 weeks. So if you're watching the show when we do it on YouTube, I'm not doing that today. Whatever. If you're listening to the show, this is where I'm at. I'm shooting a movie out here. This is what I've been training on horses for. So I've been talking a lot on this podcast about how I've been training to ride horses. This has been the saga on the podcast lately, that like every week I give you a little update on where I'm at with horses. If you would like to go back and hear how the horse saga began, there's an episode in the past on the show called Can You Ride a Horse? It's one of the minisodes. I can't remember which one, but it was probably like 20-ish episodes ago, and the episode is called Can You Ride a Horse? And I tell the whole horse story. The abridged version that I'll tell you right now to catch you up to speed, if you want just the TLDR version, is I did this movie last year. It was movie one of a 4-movie series that I'm in, and I can say this. I can say this now, and I know I can say it. I said it on the episode back then, but I can say it now because I talked to the guy yesterday, and he was like, yeah, you can tell people you're doing this. I'm in these movies that Kevin Costner wrote and directed and stars in, and also just so many other famous people are in these movies. It's insane. The cast is huge. And I'm in them for some reason, and I was in this movie last year, and I was supposed to be able to ride horses for it, and I wasn't good at riding horses, and I had a really, really, really bad day on set. Had one of the worst days in my professional career, and I knew I was coming back for the second movie this year, and so I knew I had to figure out how to ride horses between the first movie and this movie. So I've been working on that and kind of talking about that on the podcast and giving updates on like where I'm at. I'm now out in St. George, Utah. We start filming in 2 weeks now, and I've been out here just riding with our stunt team every day. And I am getting a little better finally. After weeks and weeks of riding and riding and riding and not feeling like I'm getting much better, and my back hurts and my legs hurt, I finally have been getting some techniques down that are having me feel a little bit more flow with the horse. I'm in a little bit more rhythm with the horse. The horse is responding to my commands and my cues a little bit more consistently. And I'm seeing some light at the end of the tunnel with the horse riding saga. So that's really good. But I want to start off the show with sort of a positive story here, with a positive thing that's happened in my life. So that's the first thing, is like the horse riding is going a little bit better. I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, a pro yet. I don't think I look great. The woman I'm riding with right now out in St. George sent me a video of me riding the other day where I thought I was riding pretty well. And I watched that video and I was like, okay, I still look pretty stiff. You can see the fear in my body. So I was like, that's my new goal, is to like see if I can relax that body a little bit while I'm riding. But I'm out here, I'm riding every day. I'm obviously really nervous about the second film because the first film I didn't feel like went very well for me. I feel like I had all this imposter syndrome on that set. I was surrounded by all of these actors that I grew up watching in movies that I've been watching my entire life and every day thinking, why am I here? And then I have this experience on this horse that really confirms my imposter syndrome. And it's like, yeah, you shouldn't be here, man. And it was just like my biggest nightmare as an actor. And so I'm coming out for this second movie thinking like, I can't believe they didn't fire me. I can't believe they didn't recast my part. But I guess they're willing to give it another shot. I better do better this time around. And I feel all this pressure. And it's been, I can't even express to you how much anxiety it's been. It has been months and months and months of a constant drip of panic and worry about this job, about whether or not I was going to be able to ride well enough to do a good job on the movie, about whether or not I was going to totally bomb again in front of all these people that I really respect. I'm out here in St. George, and all I'm really doing is just like showing up one day at a time, just going like, all I can do is ride that day and hope that it goes okay, you know, and just when we get to shooting, we'll see if I'm any better, or, you know, we'll just take this whole job one day at a time. But I've been just riddled with anxiety, riddled with panic the entire process. So anyway, that's sort of the beginning to now of the horse riding saga. Yesterday, I was all set to record this episode of the podcast with my guests, who are going to be Sid and Olivia. If you don't know who Sid and Olivia are, if you're not following them TikTok, if you're not following them listening audience in the podcast, you absolutely should be following Sid and Olivia. I've interviewed a lot of different people on this podcast who I met from the internet, and content creators that I respect and content creators that I'm a fan of and content creators that I'm excited about becoming friends with. Sid and Olivia are like I'm a genuine fanboy about their content. I really think they're like a comedy duo and brand that everyone should know about. I think they should have their own TV show. I think they should be super duper famous. I think they're two of the funniest writers and performers I follow online, and I met them at a party a few weeks back, and they were going to come and be on the show. I had them all lined up. I was getting all my gear set up, all my lights set up, everything set up to do this podcast interview. And right as we're about to go, the second AD on the movie calls me and he says, "What are you doing tonight?" And I say, "Oh, I've got these podcasts that I'm recording," because I was doing that podcast and then I was guesting on someone else's podcast. I was like, "I've got these podcasts. I'm all booked up for the rest of the night." And he's like, can you cancel that stuff and get out of it? And I was like, "Oh, not really. I've already rescheduled these interviews several times, and like, I kind of have to do it." And he's like, "Okay, well, Kevin wants you to come over to his house and like talk to him about the movie. He wants to just like meet with you one-on-one and have like a conversation with you." And I'm like, what? And he's like, "Yeah, we had a production meeting today and he heard that you were in town writing and he wants you to come over to his house." And I was just like, I gotta have you understand. There are so many famous people in this movie, and I could totally see him being like, "Hey, have Luke Wilson come over to my house and we're going to talk about the movie. Have Will Patton come over for dinner. We're going to talk about the movie. Have Danny Houston, have Michael." There's a lot of famous people that I could see the director of this movie wanting to have a sit down with and have a one-on-one with. I'm not one of them. I'm just like another guy in the movie. And he doesn't need to do a one-on-one session with me, but they're like, "Can you go over to his house tonight?" So I'm like, "Okay, I think I have to." You don't not go over to Kevin Costner's house when he says he wants you to go over to his house and talk to him about the movie that you're in that he's making. So I went over there to do that. And I'm also going over there going like, is this where he's going to fire me? Is he going to be like, "Hey, I heard that you're not making a lot of progress on the horse. Maybe we just recast this thing, and like, I'm so sorry about this. It's not going to work out." I'm like, What am I walking into here? So I don't know how do I dress? Am I supposed to look nice? Am I supposed to I don't know. I'm not the kind of actor who has regular meetings like this. I work from time to time with famous people, but I say hi, how are you, and shake their hand, and we don't say much else to each other. I don't get invited over to their home to have a conversation. So I'm like, what's going on? I get there, his assistant opens the door. He's obviously rented the nicest house in St. George to work from as his home base. And I come in and he's sitting at the kitchen counter and he's got the script out and he's working on it. And he says, come over here, pull a chair up. I come and sit down next to him and he goes, hey, so, I heard that you're working on writing. And I said, yeah, I am. I've been writing every day for the last, several weeks. And he goes, that's good. That's good. Thank you for doing that. And he's like, I know that you're pretty concerned about writing in this second movie. And I was like, yeah, I'm making progress, but I don't know if I'm making progress fast enough, but I'm going to do everything I can do to really make it work, And he goes, well, listen, the reason why you're in this movie and the reason why you're back for the second movie is I think you're a really good actor. He's like, I really liked what I saw last year. I thought you did a really nice job with your dialogue. I feel like you're really natural. He's like, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to get you off the horse as much as possible. And I'm just going to give you more stuff to say. He's like, so I'm just going to put you in more scenes with people on your feet. And he's like, so that's what I'm doing right now. I'm just finding places to put you in to just have you say more. And I was just like, what? So he's having me over to his house to tell me that it's okay. He wants me to feel good and comfortable and safe, and that he's not going to make me do anything on the horse that I don't feel comfortable doing, and that he's writing actively a larger part for me in his movie. This is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. This is The Bodyguard. Okay, and I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston style. This is the fish man from Waterworld. This dude, this is Field of Dreams. This is Superman's dad, dude. Superman's dad is looking at me going, don't worry, buddy, I got you. I want you in my movie, and I want you speaking more in my movie. Dude, maybe, and it's such a simple, stupid thing. It's such a stupid little moment, but I'm telling you, for my money at 35 years old, and I've been doing this since I was 10 years old professionally, maybe the pinnacle experience of my professional acting career. I kind of still can't believe it. I've been talking to family members and friends on the phone, people that I grew up with, who I talked about making movies with when I was a kid, and going, guess what I just did last night? Guess whose house I was at? And guess the conversation that I had? Robin Hood, dude. You know how many times I watched that movie growing up? It doesn't feel real. For me, I'm not that guy, man. I'm not that guy. I'm not doing meetings like that every day. Okay. I'm a small actor from Salt Lake City. That's who I am. Okay. So this is crazy. This is crazy. We're going to get into the show because we got a lot of show to get into, but I wanted to start off with something positive here at the top because we got a lot of bullshit we got to talk about on the rundown of what the show is going to be. But this is something crazy. At some point, his editor, who's staying at this house that he's working at, comes out. The editor for the films that I'm in, the guy who's editing these movies, comes out of his little editing bay. He's working in this theater, a theater room that's in this house where he's editing the movie. Comes out and Kevin goes, oh, hey, this is our editor. I turn around to meet the editor, and the editor goes, well, if it isn't my pal, Austin. And I go, what? I go, do you know what that is? And he goes, yeah, man, I've been following you online for several years now. And I just go, huh? And he goes, yeah. He goes, when I first got this gig and I first started editing this film, I was so excited when I saw you were in it. And I'm like, dude, what? What? So now the editor that Kevin Costner hired to edit his movie is saying in front of Kevin Costner that he follows me on the internet, and that he and Costner's like, what are you guys talking about? And the guy's like, oh, I follow this guy online. He's great. He's fantastic. And Kevin's like, what do you do online? So now Kevin Costner knows about TikTok and Instagram and the podcast and all that. Like, dude. It was insane. We went in, we watched a 30-minute sizzle reel of the first movie. It's looking great. It's looking crazy. It's one of those crazy moments where I'm watching this sizzle reel with all these people. Again, this is public knowledge. You can look it up. You can look up what Kevin Costner's doing right now. I'm watching this. We got Sam Worthington. We got Sienna Miller. We got Michael Rooker, Danny Houston, Will Patton, Luke Wilson. We got Kevin Costner. We got all these faces that are in this movie. And then there's like shots of like me being a cowboy next to like Luke Wilson, like walking. And I'm just like, that dude, what? And I'm watching it in a theater next to KC, dude, Robin Hood, dude. And I'm sitting next to him, and he's bumping me with his elbow going like, yeah, check it out. That's you. That's you. And I'm like, yeah, that's me, man. Dude, I needed that W so bad. Months of panic, months of anxiety, and all I could do was just keep showing up. Keep showing up and keep focusing on the task in front of me. Keep doing things that scare me. So what I want to say to everyone listening to this is do stuff that scares you, okay? Do stuff that makes you uncomfortable. Do stuff that lean into fear. I cannot express to you the amount of fear that I had and still have about horseback riding. It paralyzes me almost. Every single day that I go to ride horses for this movie, I'm afraid. Every single day, I'm afraid, is today going to be the day where something goes terribly wrong and I get hurt in some awful way? Every single day. And I keep showing up day after day after day, and I'm making marginal improvements from day to day, but not much. Not enough to be like, oh, I got this. I'm terrified that I'm going to be exposed as a fraud again in this second movie. I'm terrified that the entire process of shooting it is just going to be one panic attack after another. It's just going to be surviving day to day. And now here we are 2 weeks out from shooting, and I get this news yesterday that makes me feel like I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. The boss man likes me. He wants me in his movie. And it's okay that I'm here. Crazy, dude. So anyway, that's why Sid and Olivia weren't on the show yesterday. That's why I'm late doing the podcast, but I'm here. That's my good news. Let's get into the down, the Bad Take Brigade. It's been a while since we've done Bad Take Brigade. This is obviously the segment where we go around the internet and we look at all the bad takes, and there are so many bad takes right now on the internet. You know, between people freaking out about drag queens and trying to ban drag shows, and people trying to ban gender-affirming care for trans kids, and people once again digging into their bag of bad arguments about gun violence. There are lots and lots and lots of bad takes. Too many, honestly, to cover. But I gathered a bunch of them, and we're going to just roll through as many as we can stomach. So if you just want to hear the good stuff, you can cut the podcast off now and say, that was a great story about Austin hanging out with the bodyguard from Whitney Houston's The Bodyguard. And you can end the podcast right there. Or you can continue listening and get into the hellscape with me. Okay, this first bad take is from a video that I saw on TikTok. I don't even know who this person is that's saying this, but it's an opinion that I hear a lot that I'm surprised is expressed by as many people as it is expressed by. I'm always surprised that this opinion is as prevalent as it is, as popular as it is. Let's listen to it. Here we go. It's this.
I guess my main issue with trans women being seen as women and not being seen as trans women is they're changing the definition of women and expecting everybody to go along with that. And that affects me, yes, they are. And that affects me directly. You say trans women are women. Trans women are trans women. It's a very different experience.
Trans women are women.
We're just going to agree to disagree with that.
Okay, so that's the argument. You've heard it before. You've heard this argument of, well, they're changing the definition of a word, and they're expecting everyone else to go, I can't, that's not fair. That's not fair to me. We heard this with gay marriage, right? We can't just change the definition of marriage. If you look up marriage in the dictionary, it's a legally binding contract between a man and a woman. So we can't change the definition of a word. And that's the same thing with trans women. Well, they're changing the definition of a word. My hands are tied by the dictionary, by the definition of words, you know, the things that we made up and the definitions that we also made up that we get to decide on. I would love to extend dignity and basic human rights and respect to trans women, but I can't change the definition of a word. So there's nothing I can do. So this is my beef with this argument. The thing that's so crazy about this argument to me is like how many people use it, how many people go to it when it's so bad and flimsy. Because what it boils down to is a person saying like, I would totally be down with treating these people like people and giving them equality and equal rights and equal consideration. I can't though, because the dictionary won't let me. And that's so stupid and weak. And it's crazy that no one sees what a weak position that is. That it's like, cool, if that's the only thing keeping you from like being down with this marginalized group, then let's just change that definition right quick and get you on the team. If that's all it is, and obviously that's not all it is, it's a, you know, it's a smokescreen disingenuous argument, but like if that's all it is, then let's change the like people acting like we can't. I would change the definition of the, I just, we can't. There's nothing we can do about that's what that those definitions, they're set, you know? And if we start changing definitions, then it's chaos. As though words don't literally have evolution as time progresses. Like, that's literally etymology is the study of the evolution of words and language. Like, when you talk about the etymology of a word, you're talking about how that word went from one thing to another. Like, we have an entire study of how language evolves over time for a reason. So the dictionary definition for woman that most conservatives are citing when they talk about changing the definition of woman is an adult human female. It's the ending of Matt Walsh's shitty documentary, What is a Woman? The conclusion is an adult human female. You know, the answer to the question that he already had before he even began making his shitty documentary where he disingenuously asked a bunch of people that question that he already had determined he knew the answer to. So it's like, I did a whole podcast episode on that about how that's an insanely unscientific process to go, I'm going to go ask a bunch of people this question, pretending that I'm genuinely curious about learning, but I already have decided what the answer is. And the answer is the current dictionary definition, which is an adult human female. And I talked in that episode about how that's a definition that seems really simple until you get into particulars, until you start digging and getting into the complexity of that definition. What do we mean by adult? Different cultures around the world define adulthood at different areas of life. Different people mature into adulthood differently. Like, I talked in that episode about how I literally don't think I became a real adult till I was 30. It takes different people different amounts of time to reach a certain kind of adult level maturity. Just because the United States of America says that the legal age of adulthood is 18 or 21, depending on which one of those you want to pick, doesn't mean that that's actually scientifically the literal dictionary definition of what constitutes an adult, because different countries have a different age. Matt Walsh, the guy who made that documentary, has talked extensively about how he thinks that women mature faster than men, and therefore women should be able to marry and have babies as early as like 13 years old. He's talked about this. That guy who's so concerned concerned with the definition of the word woman, who can't, if you asked him, okay, Matt, what is an adult? Explain to me, give me a really concise, simple answer, what is an adult? He wouldn't be able to do it, or he'd give you an answer that would horrify you. Then you get into, okay, female. All right, now we're talking about sex, biological sex, that most animal species have this biological sex binary of male and female. But also, in most species, that binary is not just limited to those two options. There are intersex people and intersex animals and animals that go all across this sort of biological sex spectrum. So when we're talking about female, it's not like there are just two categories for humans to scientifically exist in, female and male. Those are the two most predominant categories that we see in nature, but they are not the only two. So even that is like, okay, so we're talking about sex. We're not talking about gender. Basically, what we find when we dig into that dictionary definition more is it's a pretty old-fashioned and out-of-date definition that doesn't incorporate the concept of the separation between gender and sex, that gender is a socially constructed idea or concept. It's a role that people perform, and biological sex pertains to, you know, anatomical parts. And what a person was assigned at birth, usually by the hospital, and that these are two different things. So essentially, what we probably need to do is update the definition of the words man and woman. I don't know what those definitions should be, but like, we have a definition that is too limited right now and reductive of what it actually means. And what that's just what we're learning. We're just learning more. We're just learning more about the species. We're just learning more about how gender and sex work. We're learning more and we're becoming more enlightened. And as we do that, words and their definitions tend to change. And what these people continue to go back to as a solid argument that they're all confident putting out there is, I just can't, it's not fair to change the definition of the word. It's so interesting in that clip where she says, that affects me. That really affects me. I genuinely want any cisgender woman who feels affected by the idea of changing the definition or opening up the definition of what a woman is to include trans women. I genuinely would like you to provide me with concrete examples of how that adversely affects you. I would, because that is a good faith question. That is an intellectually honest question. Unlike Matt Walsh, I actually don't know the answer to that. Like I genuinely can't think of an example of how you would be adversely affected by the definition of that word being opened up or retooled to include transgender women, to include the existence of intersex people and non-binary people. I can't think of how that would negatively affect you. She swears that it does. And I heard people say this about marriage equality too. No, that affects my marriage. Changing the definition of marriage affects my marriage. And even back then it was like, how exactly? How will allowing two men or two women to get married affect your marriage in any way? But people swore that it would. And that was their thing, was like, we can't change the definition of words. That's not fair. So why does someone use this argument? Why does this feel like a good argument for so many people to go to? Why, again and again, are people like, you know what it is? It's the definition. I think why, if I were to speculate, I would think it's because they're looking for an argument that is outside of owning up to prejudice and bigotry. And that's usually what it is, right? Is like the intellectual honesty required to just say, I just don't like them. I just don't like them. They make me feel weird. I don't like them. I don't get it. And I don't like them. And I don't want them around. The intellectual honesty required to just own that position is something most people don't have. Most bigots don't have. Most bigots can't look you straight in the eye and just go, it's just because I don't like them. Some can. And honestly, when I hear it, it's refreshing. Honestly, whenever I hear a person just be like, I don't like them, I'm like, cool. Thank you for just saying that. Thank you. So now we can actually have an honest conversation. But I think the reason why people go to this definition thing is they want to even convince themselves that they're not a bigot. I'm not a bigot. I don't hate trans people. I don't hate gay people. I just don't think it's fair to expect me to go along with changing the definition of a word. That's not fair to me. That's my hangup. So essentially what you're saying is, I have no problem with this historically marginalized group of people. In fact, I wish them nothing but the best, and I hope that they're able to find some peace, and I hope that they're able to find happiness. But I can't offer them the dignity of recognizing them as a human person, recognizing a trans woman as a woman. I can't offer a trans woman that because the dictionary won't let me. The definition of the word would have to be changed in order for me to do that. And unfortunately, that's just a bridge too far for me. Do you see what an insanely weak position that is? That's why it's so baffling to me. Because it's like, that's not a strong argument at all. If that's the only thing holding you back from embracing this marginalized community and treating them with dignity and respect, if that's it, is just, I'd have to change the definition of that word, then change the fucking definition of the word. And if changing the definition of the word is too much of an ask for you, if that really negatively affects you and that feels unfair to you, then I think it's not a stretch to say you're not actually on board for letting those people into the club and letting those people just letting them into the club. This is the analogy. Here it is. Let's say that there was like a definition of the word country club somewhere in the 1950s. It was in a dictionary somewhere, and it said a club exclusively for rich white people. And that was the definition of that word. And then some people went, you know what? We should probably start letting more people into this. It just seems, it's just not a good look. We just seem like assholes. We seem mean. And these people like already go through so much. We treat them like shit in every aspect of life. Maybe we can let like black people and Asian people and like, I don't know, like Jewish people into our country clubs. And people are like, I totally would. I 100%. Look, I don't hate black people. I'm not racist. I don't hate Asian people. I don't hate Jewish people. Like, I would 100% let them into the club. But look, it says right here in the dictionary that a country club is a club exclusive to rich white people. So I just like, is that fair to us? Is that fair to us to have to change the definition of the word so that they can come in? Like, can't they just get a different club and go to that club so that we don't have to change the definition of the word? Because that seems kind of unfair. It seems like they're actually kind of oppressing us. You know, kind of imposing their ideology on us by making us have to change the definition of the word. And I, it's not that I dislike them. I think that they're great people. I wish them the best. It's just, Does that make sense, what I'm saying? I think it does. I'm seeing everyone in the comments. Is this satire? If you're just getting here, then you wouldn't know what we're talking about. So that's that one. I'm so tired of that argument. I have to change the definition of the word. Then change it. Then change it. All right. The next bad take on the Bad Take Brigade. This is from Kristen Hawkins. I did a whole video on this on TikTok, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit more on the podcast. Kristen Hawkins is a right-wing media personality. She's a writer for Fox News. She wrote this tweet that like blew my mind when I read it because it was like reasonably popular. Like enough people liked it and retweeted it and commented support of the tweet that I was like, you can't get, this is so stupid. This is so insanely stupid. I couldn't believe it. She wrote, I'll keep saying it. Abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. I'm going to read that again. She wrote, I'll keep saying it. Abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. Checkmate libs, I suppose. The thing that boggles my mind about this tweet, that boggles my mind most about this tweet is the I'll keep saying it part. The part where she says, I'll keep saying it. Meaning, this is a thing that she is saying a lot. that she has said probably on multiple podcasts and like appearances on Fox News, and that she imagined, like, it's like, it, this is like her soundbite that she imagines herself like on the debate stage running for president. And she would say this on the debate stage to thunderous applause, that she would say this at a CPAC: abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. And everyone stands up and cheers. Oh, it's brilliant. She's really proud of this. She's saying, I'll keep saying it. She's said this enough times that, and in none of those times did her brain go, oh, wait a minute, that's actually the stupidest fucking thing I've ever said. At no point, and at no point in any of the places that she said this, on any of the podcasts that she said this on any of the interviews that she said this on, at any of the dinner parties that she said this on, did someone go, wait a minute, Kristen, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard. Wait, Kristen, say again what you just said. Oh, I said abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. Wait, Kristen, did you know that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard? Hold on, Kristen, I'm your friend. I'm your friend, Kristen. But did you know that's the stupidest fucking thing you've ever said and that I've ever heard? Do you know why, Kristen? Let's break it down together. So the reason why, in your statement, abortion isn't healthcare is because pregnancy isn't a disease. And Kristen goes, well, pregnancy isn't a disease. And you go, oh, yeah, you're right, Kristen, you're right. Pregnancy isn't a disease. You're absolutely right. But that's your reason for why abortion isn't healthcare, meaning that something is only healthcare if it's a disease. That's the inherent thing that you're saying, is healthcare is only the treatment of diseases and nothing else. If it's not a disease, then it's not healthcare, is what you're saying. That's ipso facto the result of what you're saying. Do you understand that? That's what the because means in what you said. Abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy is not a disease. First of all, no one is arguing that pregnancy is a disease. Some people might call it a parasitic infection. I think that that definition could be argued to work, but no one is saying that abortion or that pregnancy is a disease. No one is saying that abortion should be legal because pregnancy is a disease. No one is saying abortion is healthcare because pregnancy is a disease. So she's fighting windmills. She's fighting straw men, literally. She's fighting an argument that no one's actually making. But she's also saying that something is only healthcare if it's a disease. So if you break your leg and you need to go get that bone set, that's not healthcare, because a broken leg isn't a disease. Any preventative care that you might be seeking, not healthcare, doesn't count. That's not how healthcare works. Healthcare is only for diseases. All the prenatal care that goes into just being pregnant, the entire practice of just gynecology, just checking in on lady parts, not healthcare, because having a vagina is not a disease. Treating someone who was in a car accident, not healthcare. Being in a car accident, not a disease, actually. So, is that not the stupidest thing you've ever heard? And like, nobody sees it. And this is what I mean when I talk about Republicans and conservatives being good at sloganizing, is saying a soundbite that a lot of really stupid people who don't have critical thinking skills will think is correct and not think any further about it because it feels kind of snappy. So abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. And what their brain hears is pregnancy isn't a disease. That's true. Also, I agree, because I'm already a conservative person, that abortion isn't healthcare. She's linking two things that I already think are true. Therefore, the entire statement feels true. So I literally had someone, I talked about this on Twitter, and I literally had a conservative guy in my comments say that. He said, abortion isn't healthcare? That's a true statement. Pregnancy isn't a disease? That's also a true statement. What is wrong with what she said? So that's how his brain interpreted it. First of all, I disagree with him that abortion isn't healthcare, but that's what he thinks. Like, when he hears abortion isn't healthcare, his brain goes, true, that's true. And then when he hears the back half of it, because pregnancy isn't a disease, his brain goes, true. So all his brain hears is two true things. Put them together, that's a true statement. How could that not be true? His brain misses the most important word in the sentence, which is because. The reason why abortion isn't healthcare is because pregnancy's not a disease, and something is only healthcare if it's the treatment of a disease. His brain completely omits that and just so this is what's so frustrating about the sloganizing of the right is it's like, God, if you just stop and think about that for 2 seconds, if you just think about that for 2 seconds, you'll be like, oh, wait, that's actually not that smart. It's actually not smart at all. That's not at all how healthcare works. That's not what healthcare is or isn't. My God. All right. That's enough on the Kristen Hawkins thing. We got her. The Trump indictment. Oh, dude. Oh, my God. I'm still not celebrating. I'm still not doing a happy dance. I need to see a perp walk. I need to see him in cuffs. I'm still like, no. You gotta show me. You gotta show me him in a jumpsuit in court. Not yet. I just am like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me 500 times. I will not believe you until it's all said and done. So apparently Trump is getting indicted. Okay. Conservatives are understandably and naturally freaking the fuck out. Of course they are. The sky is falling. This is a astronomical historical overreach. It's tyranny. It sets a precedent that we cannot have in America. Apparently, you know, we just don't want to set the precedent of charging former presidents with crimes that they committed. If you're a former president, you get to commit crimes, apparently. This is so funny too. They did the same thing with the Merrick Garland appointment to the Supreme Court. They were like, well, you can't appoint a Supreme Court justice in the last year of a presidency. That's not something that we do. That's just not done. Even though it was like, but this is actually how the rules work. The rules say that if there is an opening on the Supreme Court, whoever's president gets to nominate a new person to be on the Supreme. Like that's just what the rules say. And traditionally you accept that nomination. That's just how it works. But they were like, no, this is unprecedented. We can't set that precedent. And of course, when it was their turn to do the exact same thing, they flip-flopped and went, no, I mean, we're going to do it. Just like there is no doubt. And anyone who doubts that conservatives wouldn't do the exact same thing if the shoe were on the other foot, it's like, well, you guys talk about locking up political opponents literally all the time, literally nonstop, like literally all the time. We know that if you had the opportunity to indict, say, Barack Obama, you would. Like, you're not fooling anybody by being like, well, we just don't do this. This just isn't done. But in that vein of, you know, saying, well, how would you like it if we did it? Charlie Kirk, he's just the worst person, had this to say.
Some of you say, well, Charlie, there's nothing these Republicans can do. They control the DOJ, FBI. No, you're wrong. This was a local DA that indicted Trump. We have thousands of Republican sheriffs, local DAs, and we have well over 25 Republican AGs. So this is not even about forget the federal government, because guess what? They just indicted Trump in a local area. So the equivalent is this. Okay, you indict Donald Trump in Manhattan, we indict Bill Clinton in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Figure it out.
So that's great. That's great. His big gotcha is if you indict, that Trump was indicted by a local DA's office. So he's saying, if you indict Trump, then we're going to indict Bill Clinton in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. How would you like that, Dems? How'd you like that, checkmate, libs? This is why my whole series on We're Not the Same is something that I'm pushing so hard lately on my channel. It's something I've talked about extensively on the podcast. The reason why I really want to get it through people's heads that the left and the right are just not the same in this country is stuff like this. And it's so well exemplified here. Charlie Kirk has no doubt in his mind that we operate the exact same as him. That's why conservatives do the things they do. The reason why conservative media personalities and talking heads and politicians are so comfortable lying so often and being so hypocritical with their stances and being so disingenuous and bad faith with their arguments is they always assume that that's how everyone does it. There's this great book called Commander and Cheat that came out during the Trump presidency that was written by a guy who spent some time with the former president and golfed with him a lot. And he talked about how Trump's golf game revealed a lot about his character. And he talked about how Trump was a huge cheater in golfing. Surprise, surprise. Trump loved to cheat while golfing. And apparently he said to this biographer at one point, while they were golfing and while he was cheating, he looked over at him and he said, "See those guys down there?" And it was these guys that Trump was playing against in like a tournament. And he goes, "They're cheating too. Everyone does it. If I don't do it, I'm a sucker." So, and that just revealed so much about like why Donald Trump is the way that he is and why he operates the way that he does. He has convinced himself that that's just the way the world works, that you cheat and you lie to get ahead. Everybody does it. He's no different. He's just, you know, and if anything, the thing that conservatives really liked about him is that he was kind of open about it. While he was doing his candidacy for 2016, he was just kind of saying like, "Hey, you know what? Like the top 1%, the richest people on earth, they're liars and cheaters who work the systems to their favor. And I do it too." And people were like, "Hell yeah. At least he's calling it how it is. We're all liars and cheaters. We do whatever we got to do to win. We're all about winning." So when Charlie Kirk says this, he's saying it because he figures we're just like him. And he's saying, just like me, you don't want your boy to go down for crimes that he may or may not have committed. So how would you like it if we indicted Bill Clinton? And what Charlie Kirk can't get through his gigantic head, and I'm saying this as a person with a big head, Charlie Kirk has a huge head. And what Charlie Kirk can't get through that giant head is that if they're capable, if some conservative DA's office is capable of finding a good reason to indict Bill Clinton, we're totally fine with it. We're like, go on ahead. If you find something you want to indict Barack Obama about and you find like some credible, some good evidence on stuff that you think you can bring up, good charges that you think you can make stick on Barack Obama and you want to indict him, go right ahead. In fact, if you find strong evidence that Barack Obama committed like major crimes that he should go to jail for, I'm like, then rock and roll, dude. Have at it. They don't understand that we're totally okay with them taking down our dudes. We don't care, man. We're not playing team ball to a fault. I did a whole episode of the podcast about this too. And it's a thing that they don't understand. With conservatives, it's all about what's best for the team. Playing team ball. It doesn't matter if we have Venmo receipts showing that Matt Gaetz was definitely involved in human trafficking. Matt Gaetz was buying people on Venmo. He's on our team, so give him a committee assignment. Let him be the chair of the committee. Heck, doesn't matter if Herschel Walker got an abortion. Herschel Walker's on our team. What's most important is that we win. So Herschel Walker gets to have abortions because he's on the team, baby. It doesn't matter if Donald Trump is one of the most corrupt politicians in American history. He's team captain, baby. He is the team. He's the mascot, the GM, the star player. We're not taking him down. We don't care what he does. He's on the team, baby. And they figure that we play the exact same way. So Charlie Kirk, and it's like, how do you not know this? Are you not paying attention? Are you not listening to us when we speak? And I think it's just that they're conditioned to not believe people when people are speaking to them honestly. So when you tell a conservative person honestly, "I really don't care. I don't actually care about you indicting Bill Clinton. If he committed crimes that you think he should be indicted for and you can put together a case for that, that's fine. I don't care about that." They think that you're playing some kind of strategy. So there's some kind of, no, you mean something else, because that's how they operate. And that's why I try to push this thing so much of like, we're not the same, dude. We're not the same. We don't think the same way about this stuff. They know Donald Trump is supposed to be indicted, and they don't care. He's their team captain. He can't go down. If he goes down, they lose, and what's most important is winning. They think we have the same reverence for Bill Clinton? We don't care, dude. Like, I don't want an innocent guy to be indicted or go to jail, but if you got charges you want to bring up, go right ahead. It has the same energy of this clip I found from Jon Stewart's show recently. Jon Stewart was talking to this guy about inflation. Jon Stewart's new show, The Problem, on Apple Plus, it's fantastic. He was talking to this guy about inflation, and I love this moment. I'm going to play it for you because it's another example of how this guy assumes while he's talking to Jon that he's got a gotcha, and then he's going to catch Jon in a moment of hypocrisy, and it doesn't work.
And by the way, the effect of the talk show business is very different than the effect of ExxonMobil, right? I mean, let's be fair.
Isn't the show going to be on Apple TV?
Correct.
And I think Apple TV is worth about five times as much as Exxon. I think Apple's price, since the stimulus began, Apple's value has gone up by about $1.2 trillion.
Right.
That's $4,000 for every American. Just an increase in the value of Apple.
You just made my point for me.
Do you feel that Apple is somehow gouging or doing something wrong?
Yes, of course.
Oh, that's great. So what John is talking to that guy about is ExxonMobil, price gouging, and how when we talk about inflation, all we're talking about is why we can't raise wages for the workers and all this stuff, but we don't talk about corporations price gouging during, you know, say, a global pandemic. And we should be talking about them price gouging because they had record profit increases. Their profits went up like 70% while they were gouging the price of gas. And we should be talking about that. This guy thinks he's going to catch Jon Stewart in a hypocritical argument by saying, isn't your show on Apple Plus? And didn't Apple's profits go up? So do you think Apple is price gouging? Thinking that Jon Stewart's going to be like, oh, good point. But instead, Jon Stewart says about the people who pay his salary and give and cut his checks, of course I think what they did was wrong. Yes, and I'll say it right here on the show that's on Apple Plus. I'm not like you, dude. We're not the same. I'm not like you. I'm not going to try to find some disingenuous back door to be like, no, I'm not a hypocrite. What Apple did is actually okay because of this or this. He's just like, no, I have no problem saying, yep, Apple's doing it too, and they also shouldn't. It's a great moment where this guy just assumes like, well, you're like me, right? You just make a bunch of hypocritical bullshit arguments that you don't really mean. So I'm going to catch you in one of those. And John's like, no, I'm not like you. That's not how I operate. I actually have principles and like ethics. I'm not like you. And I have no problem. If Apple wants to cancel my show for saying I don't think they should be price gouging, let them cancel my show. I'll be fine. I'll find someone else to run my show. I'll find another network. I'll be okay. You know? Fantastic moment right there. Moving down the list of the Bad Take Brigade. Okay. We did changing the definition of women, and that's why you can't accept trans people. We did Kristen Hawkins on abortion. We did Charlie Kirk on the Trump indictment. Obviously, we're going to talk about the age-old debate that America just can't figure it out. We had another school shooting. Because of course we did. Because that's just, it's just what we're going to do in perpetuity. There was some lawmaker in Tennessee who just said, we're not going to fix this. And it's not our job to fix it. It's our job to defend the Constitution. Fuck that guy. I don't even know what his name is. But that's what he said. And it's not like we didn't already know that that was, you know, the position. But fuck that guy for sure. Ted Cruz tweeted out, I've got to pull this up. I forgot to grab this before the thing. Ted Cruz tweet on Tennessee shooting. I can't find it. It doesn't matter. You can look it up. He had this tweet that went viral. I mean, it was huge. It was a huge tweet. Millions of views, like 80,000 likes, tons of reshares. Ted Cruz said in the tweet, you know, people say thoughts and prayers aren't enough, and I agree. First line, I'm like, hey, I agree with you, Ted Cruz. He goes, which is why I tried to introduce a bill that Democrats blocked that would have put more armed police in schools and it could have prevented this from happening. And he says at the end of it, one armed police officer could have put an end to this madman's, this gunman's spree if there had been one armed police officer in that school. This is what Ted Cruz said. So Ted Cruz basically said, I tried to introduce a bill that would have put more police officers in school. Democrats wouldn't let me. So I tried to do something. They wouldn't let me. It's so insane how every time this happens, we hear the same nonsense arguments as though we haven't already had the conversation a million times before. What was so frustrating to me about that tweet, what was so enraging to me about that tweet, particularly from Ted Cruz, a senator from Texas, is that the last major school shooting we had before this one in Tennessee, the last big one was the Uvalde shooting. And famously, this was a shooting where the police arrived at the same time as the gunman. It's not like the police were called and they got there 15 minutes later. They were already chasing the gunman and they arrived at the school at the same time. There were probably three or four police officers on site at the same time as the gunman. So right away, they outnumbered this guy 4-1. Within about an hour, every police department within like a 5-county region was at Uvalde. There were like 400 uniformed police officers at this school. They spent, famously, there were investigations into this. It was a huge scandal. Hours and hours, these police officers spent doing nothing, holding parents back, parents who were trying to charge into the school to save their kids, holding them back because they had orders not to do anything, not to interrupt. They said that the doors were locked and they couldn't get into the doors. That was a lie. That wasn't true. We've got footage of the school security cameras of them just sort of dicking around in there while kids and teachers and students are being killed. A lot of cops said that the reason why they didn't do anything is because there's nothing in their job description that mandates that they have to put themselves in harm's way to save people. So the thing that's so frustrating about Ted Cruz's tweet is it just happened in his home state. And we just got to test his hypothesis. We just had an excellent opportunity to test his hypothesis that more cops in schools would stop school shootings, and it failed spectacularly, tragically, infuriatingly, it failed. And this isn't the first time that the hypothesis of good guy with a gun will fix the problem has been proven to be not true. There are multiple instances where a police officer was in, or multiple police officers were in a position to do something about a mass shooting and did not until they had orders that they could. And even then, took too long. It's not like firefighters where, like, if the building's on fire, you go in. You go in and you stop the fire. It's not like that with cops. Cops have protocols and orders and a way of doing things and an order to which they do things. And it's not just, oh, there's a problem, let's run in there and get it fixed. That's not what's going on. We've had cops in schools since the 90s. We've been increasingly putting more and more cops in schools since the Columbine shootings, and it hasn't worked. So it's always frustrating every time this happens in America that we have to rerun the hits every time. Oh, it's mental health. Okay, what are we doing about mental health? Well, we don't want to spend too much money on mental health because we don't like spending money in the budget unless it's for the military or for giving police increased budgets. Okay. Oh, well, banning guns won't do anything. That's not a thing that works. Also, the Second Amendment. Second Amendment says shall not be infringed. There's nothing we can do about that. It's as weak as the I can't change the definition thing. We literally know that we can change the Constitution and are supposed to. The Constitution was designed to be changed as whatever time deemed necessary. So they knew when they wrote the Constitution, what we're saying here might not always be true in the future. That's why we're designing a process to amend this thing and to change this thing as the country moves along. But Republicans are, can't change that thing in the Constitution, can't change it. Nothing we can do about that. It's the exact same thing as the definition of the word. Can't change the definition of the word. Sorry, it's so weak. Kids are dead. It's the number one cause of death for kids and teenagers. Do you understand how insane that is? Do you understand how insane it is that the number one cause of death for kids and teenagers in America is gun violence? And Republicans are like, would do something about it, but I can't because of the Constitution. And Ted Cruz is saying stuff like, maybe if we put more cops in schools, even though we've already been putting cops in schools, and it already hasn't worked. It's crazy how often Republicans get to try out their stupid ideas and their bad ideas, and how often we get to see that those ideas actually don't work. It would be so refreshing if they would just say, hey, let's just try. Let's just try an assault weapons ban for a trial period and just see. Let's just see if the amount of mass shooting deaths goes down even by 5%, I think would be worth it. Just like 5% reduction in mass shooting deaths if we restrict access to assault weapons. Let's see if it works. Let's just see. Interestingly enough, we did do that actually. In the 90s, we introduced a ban on assault weapons, and the Republicans got rid of it in the mid-2000s. And you know what happened? In the time that the assault weapons ban was on, gun violence deaths went down. After the assault weapons ban was lifted by Republicans, they exploded. So again, we're at a point with this debate, with the gun violence debate, where we have all of the evidence that we need. We've had all of the evidence that we've needed for some time, which makes the debate particularly tiring and frustrating. We are at a point where we have known for a while what the problem is and what the solution is. We have tested different hypotheses of different solutions. We've tested out different solutions that haven't worked, that have been shown to be ineffective, and we've tested certain solutions that have been shown to be massively effective. We know. So it's so frustrating every time this happens, because every argument that comes back, that's the rerun arguments of just, well, maybe it's mental health, maybe it's this or that, is like, no, we've already done this though. This isn't a new conversation. We've already done it. And the reason why it's a sort of play the hits, rerun old arguments thing is because there's nothing left to be said. The reason why Ted Cruz can tweet out, hey, what if we put more cops in schools, is because, like, he's just owning up to the fact that that's where we're at, is we're just going to pretend like that's a new idea. We're just going to pretend like no one's ever said put more cops in schools before, and that's a new idea that Ted Cruz is introducing into the conversation, and maybe it's something we should try, even though he knows we already tried it, we've already been trying it, it already hasn't worked. And he knows that once upon a time we did try an assault weapons ban, and that once upon a time it did work. And he doesn't care. Doesn't care. And I think, I mean, by the way, I want to remind you that Ted Cruz is also the guy who came up with the idea to put one door in and out of schools after Uvalde. That was his idea. So sometimes there are new ideas that you haven't heard before that you're like, whoa, that's a new one. And that's what happens. Like, they've exhausted every possible reasonable argument of how to weasel out of the conversation, like mental health. There's too many guns in the country to ban the Constitution. We got to uphold the Constitution and defend that. They've more cops in schools. Good guy with a gun. Give guns to teachers. They've exhausted all of those arguments that, like, maybe possibly could work. And when they don't just rerun the hits, they wind up saying stuff like, what if there was one door in and out of the schools? That's what Ted Cruz said after Uvalde, because he was just out of ideas. So he just said just a thing that's as stupid as saying abortion isn't healthcare because pregnancy isn't a disease. He just said something that stupid. Maybe even more stupid. just a thing that like instantly any adult with a functioning brain would have been like, oh, wait, that's actually, nope. Because if the school were to catch on fire or even just in an active shooter situation, you wouldn't want to funnel every teacher and student and faculty member into one doorway. That wouldn't be a great way to evacuate the school or to escape a fire or an active shooter situation. Oh, yeah, that's a really, really stupid idea. But he said that. And I've been thinking about why is it? Why is it that not just conservative lawmakers, but conservative voters and just conservative people in general, why are they so unwilling to consider? Like, don't you think that at a certain point you would go, hey, you know what? I'm putting my politics aside. I'm putting my team ball aside. I'm tired of kids dying in schools. I'm tired of it. I'll try whatever. Don't you think at some point you'd go, sure, let's try an assault weapons ban. Let's see if it works. Let's see if it helps reduce this a little bit. Let's just try it. You know, if it doesn't work, then you guys can eat your humble pie. We'll say, hey, we tried your thing. It didn't work. But I've been thinking about this. Why are they so unwilling to try? Why are they so unwilling to just be open to it? And I think it goes back to the thing that I was talking about with Charlie Kirk and the guy that Jon Stewart was interviewing. It's because these people are so committed to the cause of winning the culture war, of winning the ideological war for their team, that they're all in at any cost. They're all in. And some people in the comments right now are saying NRA and money. That's part of it. Definitely for like lawmakers who are getting paid off by lobbyists and stuff. But like voters aren't getting paid by lobbyists. You know, the people that you're talking with, the people that you're talking to on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram that you're getting into arguments with in comment sections on Reddit, they're not getting paid by lobbyists. Why are those people so unwilling to be open to the possibility that maybe an assault weapons ban or even just increased restrictions on how people get guns? Why are they so closed off to the idea of trying that? And I think it's because they are so ideologically committed to winning for their team and acknowledging that maybe there is some sanity and something to be said for the idea of restricting access to assault weapons, that maybe an assault weapons ban could be an effective thing. Acknowledging that would mean ceding points in the culture war to the left. And that is just a non-starter. Anything that's going to result in them having to concede certain points and lose points in the war is off the table. If we tried an assault weapons ban and it worked, that would mean they would have to say, okay, we were wrong. You know what? And you would think that a reasonable person, that a person who their main goal is just protecting kids, is just making sure that kids are safe in school and that we have a different leading cause of death for kids and teenagers than something as preventable as gun violence. You would think that people would just be willing to try whatever, even if it means I'm wrong. So that person that you're debating with in the comment section that swears to you that they know more about guns than you do and that you're ignorant when you're talking about guns, you would think that they would at least be willing to just say, hey, I'll try it and I'll happily be wrong. I'll happily be wrong if I'm wrong. The reason why they can't do that is because they cannot lose that ground to their ideological opponents. And they assume that that's how we're playing too, that just we're doing whatever it takes to win, that all of this stuff is just about the culture war. It's all just about winning for the team. They don't understand that we don't give a shit about scoring points for the left or the right, that we are genuinely just trying to do something, anything, to stop this from happening so often. It's wild. It's wild stuff, dude. It's crazy. Can you hear my chair? I'm in a very loud chair in this hotel room. Somebody said earlier, is your chair going to be your guest on the podcast? And I think so for the next few weeks. Yeah, dude, there's also the aspect too of like, if you, if you do, it's sort of the thing where people, you know, like the reason why I think all this stuff is sort of tied together that I've talked about today in this breakdown of the Bad Take Brigade today. Cause like, you know, like the reason why people say, oh, we can't change the definition of what a woman is or change the definition of marriage is to give themselves an argument that shields them from having to deal with the fact that they're a bigot who has some prejudiced views. They're coming up with an argument that allows them to go, no, I'm not a bigot. It's just about definitions. And I think this is in the same way too, where it's like, if I were to acknowledge that maybe there is some logic to restricting access to AR-15s and semi-automatic weapons and assault weapons, if I were to acknowledge that there is some logic to that, what I would also be saying and admitting to myself is that I've been digging my heels in on this issue for years, while the body count of teachers and students at schools and people at malls and movie theaters has been growing exponentially, growing and growing and growing. I've been digging my heels in on that and turning a blind eye to all of that death just so I could score points in the culture war. And that's a really hard thing that people would have to be intellectually honest with themselves about if they were to say, let's try it your way. Let's just see. Because if we were right, if it turned out that we were right and it worked, they would have to go, shit, I was cool with a lot of people dying just because I didn't want to acknowledge that maybe some lib on the internet had a good point. That's a tough thing to get honest about. Charles Sudi, I'm going to go over to TikTok now. On TikTok says, the only way to hold politicians to the collective will of peeps is through a dedicated social media. It's definitely a good tool. That was also on my rundown, and I got to say this TikTok ban, I don't know enough about it to actually speak on it at length. All I know is it's not good, and it's not what they're telling us it is. It's not just a TikTok ban. It's the government literally trying to write legislation, xenophobic fear. This is nothing new. Utilizing racism and xenophobic fear. Ooh, the Chinese are spying on you. You don't want the Chinese getting your secrets, do you? Utilizing xenophobic and racist fear to get people to be okay with ceding a ton of freedom in the way that we operate on the internet. It's not just about TikTok. It's a lot about the government sneaking in a lot of control over how we operate on social media because they are aware of this point that this commenter is making, that the only way to hold politicians to the collective will of the people is through a dedicated social media. I don't know if it's the only way, but it's one of the most effective tools we've ever had. I wish that Democrats understood that it is like the reason why they keep winning elections is because Gen Z and the younger generations are getting politically radicalized and activated through apps like TikTok. I wish they understood that like they're signing their own death warrants as the Democratic Party if they're getting on board with this. JCamille.co says, it's approving invasive overregulation to excuse underregulation of government monitoring. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, you know? I don't know. What it feels like to me is collectively, both Democrats and Republicans see the ability of people to organize and radicalize each other and communicate on social media apps like this. They see that as a threat to their power collectively. And it's actually something that, like, weirdly, they're able to have bipartisan cooperation on. And that's really scary. That's what's really scary. Anytime Republicans and Democrats are finding a common cause to unite on, we should be skeptical. We should be a little bit like, why? Why are you guys all of a sudden together on this? What do you both stand to lose if this thing doesn't happen your way? Or what do you both stand to gain? How is this mutually beneficial or mutually detrimental to both of you? What's going on here? Um, The console cat says, you should watch the TikTok CEO testifying. It's more funny than when Zuck did. I did watch a lot of that. And I would just say to anyone listening to this who wants to know more about this like TikTok ban bill, anyone who utilizes social media in your day-to-day life, look into it. Look into it. Go watch that footage of the hearing with the TikTok CEO. There are a lot of like reasonable, good questions that they could have asked. It was embarrassing. Everyone's roasting them hard on TikTok, and rightly so. People being just like asking questions like, are you plugged into my Wi-Fi? And the guy being like, that's not how Wi-Fi works. They're like, then are you plugged into it? But is it, are you on my Wi-Fi? And are you looking at my Wi-Fi? And it's like, we don't look at your Wi-Fi. That's not, they're like, well, what about my RAM on my computer? Are you in the RAM? Do you have, how many RAMs are you getting off of my computer? And they're like, that's not what any of, you should watch it. But also you should look into, what's going on there. Yeah, I don't know, dude. That was a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff going on in the world right now. I didn't talk about the shooter being trans. I'll say this. Obviously, blanket statement, I don't support personally, acts of mass violence as a form of effective or justified protest. I think once you start killing people, once you start killing kids, you lose your footing on any kind of statement you might be trying to make. And I'm also not, I haven't read their manifesto or anything like that. I don't really give a shit. So I'm not really aware of what their motives were or anything like that. So I want to say really unequivocally that I don't support violence and I don't condone violence. But it's sort of, and people use this event in history way too often, but it's just the easiest analogy to make, and it's the thing that most people would understand. We are currently, and I've talked about this on the podcast, I've talked about this on my channel, we are currently in the middle of an attempted genocide of transgender people and of gender nonconforming people and eventually just of the entire queer population. Republicans have made it very clear, conservatives have made it very, very clear that they are setting their sights directly on the queer population, on the trans population first. That's like their first and foremost target, but overall on just the entire queer population that they want to eradicate. As they see it, the queer virus from society. They've made it very clear that they are not interested in creating space in society for these people, that they want to eliminate these people from society. We are in the middle of, no hyperbole, an attempted genocide. At every turn, at every possible opportunity, conservatives and Republicans vilify, demonize, dehumanize trans people every chance they get. They seek to minimize and marginalize these people more and more and more and strip them of more dignities and more rights and more humanity. So, that being said, if this were, to go to this way overused analogy, if this were Germany in the 1930s, let's say, late 1930s, maybe early 1940s, Germany, late 1930s, and a Jewish person is watching their country get progressively more and more hostile towards their community. Progressively, more and more and more, this person's watching as their government continues to sign off on and embolden acts of aggression and acts of violence and acts of hatred towards them and their community, continues to dehumanize them, continues to strip them of rights, and continues to paint them in their press and in their stories as the enemy and vilify them. And one day, one person, one individual decides they've had enough and that they need to fight back, that they need to fight back in a way that hits harder than just protesting in the streets or trying to have a conversation about it or have a discussion about it. They decide that in order to be heard, they need to hit in the language of the oppressor. They need to hit back in a violent way. And they make a little makeshift bomb out of a stick of dynamite or something, and they throw it into a Hitler Youth school. So there's a little school where a bunch of little Hitler Youth Nazis are being trained to be hateful Nazis, and this person goes by and throws a stick of dynamite in there, kills a bunch of kids and some teachers. Again, I don't think you should kill kids. I don't think that's a good thing to do. And I don't think that it helps further along a cause of peace and love and a cause of enlightening the world and trying to bring civility and equality to the world. A message of acceptance and creating space and inclusivity for all. I think you lose a lot of your moral footing when you result to that level. But do you understand how A leads to B leads to C in that situation? Do you get how the dots get connected? When a person feels like they have no more recourse, they have been backed into a corner and it is now time to fight for their life, quite literally, and is willing to die for the cause, do you get how potentially you get a transgender person going into a Christian school and saying, maybe you'll listen to me now? And I want to be really clear, again, I am not signing off on mass violence. I do not condone it. I do not support it. And unfortunately, what's happening now and what's going to happen is the oppressors are going to see this as an excuse to go even harder, to hit even harder. And that's also why. So not only do you lose your moral footing when you resort to that, that's why I don't support it for that. Also, it's just, I just don't think there's ever a time to kill kids. So not only do you lose your moral footing and you lose my support when you do that, but also you actually hurt the cause. You actually hurt the cause because now the people that you're trying to get their attention, the hope, if I throw this bomb into the Hitler Youth School, is that the Nazis will go, oh, geez, you know what? God, now that it's our kids that got hurt, I mean, holy shit, I actually see the error of my ways. That's the hope. And it doesn't work out that way. That's not the result. The result is that the propaganda gets ratcheted up. The propaganda becomes, see, we told you. We told you needed to not trust those people. We told you those people were bad. We told you those people were crazy. We told you those people were mentally unwell and not to be trusted. We told you. And they ratchet it up and they push even harder. So yeah, it's a bummer, man. Not to mention that like two mass shooters out of like 2,500 over the last, 25 years or something have been trans and the rest have been straight white men overwhelmingly. It's been like 99.9% have been straight white men, usually Christian. So to say nothing of that statistical disparity. But yeah, I'm not if that was the motive of the shooter, I'm not sure that the message was received in the way that they maybe hoped that it was. Yeah, but I get the anger. I get the fear. I get feeling backed into a corner, feeling like you're out of options. And I get that they're the ones that are doing that, that they're the ones that are creating that situation. It's just a shit situation. Celis 4217 says, no, the message was not received. The trans community does not stand behind it. My trans friend have all said no. Well, of course. I'm not saying that the message is received by the trans community. I'm saying the message is not received by conservatives and Christians, the people who are oppressing the trans community. They're not going to go, oh, geez, you know what? Maybe we were wrong. The message isn't received that way. And I know that the trans community overwhelmingly does not support this violence either. I know that this person, this shooter, does not speak for the trans community and is not a representative of that community. Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of conservative Christian people aren't going to understand that and are going to feel like this person absolutely is the spokesperson for that community. And represents that community, and that's the bummer. Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, historically marginalized communities are constantly dealing with insane dehumanization and violence in the most peaceful ways. I remember when the Black Lives Matter movement was really picking up steam in 2020 after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. I mean, it had already been around for about 5 years, but there was that big resurgence in 2020 when we all were home during the pandemic, and we had free time to get involved with causes and get involved and take civil action, you know. And there was that great interview with that woman on the street who said, "You should be really glad that we don't want revenge." And that was a big slogan, is like, you should be grateful that we don't want revenge, that all we want is justice. And that's so often what you see from historically marginalized communities, is like the restraint. It's actually crazy that with all of the violence that is enforced on trans people, with all of the dehumanization that is enforced on trans people, all of the bigotry and the oppression and the prejudice that they have to deal with, all of the degradation and the vilification that they go through on a day-to-day basis, that they deal with it all with such grace, with such an eye toward a peaceful resolution. Resolute in, I am a person and I demand that you treat me with respect and dignity, and I will not back down from that, but I am going to demand that in a way that is peaceful. From time to time, I might be out at a protest and it might get a little shovey. I might throw a brick or two, but the fact that that's not all that's going on, the fact that it's not all out warfare, that we're not just going, you treat me like a human being or I'm going to kill as many people as I have to kill until I get my respect. The fact that that's not how it goes down, the fact that that is not how the Black community has conducted themselves ever in all the entire history of racial subjugation and oppression in America, that they have always conducted themselves with dignity. And people always talk about Black Lives Matter burning down cities and stuff and throwing Molotov cocktails and lighting cop cars on fire. And it's like, do you understand what a drop in the bucket that is compared to 400 years of torture, of generational abuse, of just the most unimaginably inhuman torture and violence? And every once in a while, a cop car gets rolled over at a protest and you're like, well, see? These people are out of control, man. Why can't they just do it peacefully? Well, they do. Colin Kaepernick took a knee and the country freaked the fuck out. Inspired people to get down on their knees and just quietly say, hey, I don't stand for cops killing unarmed Black people in the streets and not being held accountable for it. And the country freaked the fuck out. Not like that. Don't do it like that. And in all that history, 400 years, there's like a handful of times where it got a little chippy, where some people got pushed around, where some windows got broken. It's the restraint is unfathomable. The restraint shown is unfathomable. And again, it's more evidence of how the two sides of this ideological divide are not the same. They don't operate with the same mindset. The right was driven into ravenous violence based on a lie that the election was stolen from them in 2020. They thought they won the election. They didn't. And all of their principles went right out the window. Back the blue, thin blue line, Blue Lives Matter. Nah, not today. I'm going to kill some cops today. I'm going to beat a cop to death on the steps of the Capitol with an American flag pole, because I think that my guy should have won the election. No backbone, no principles, out the window. My leader, my team captain, told me to go and fight, and I'm going. No questions asked. All my principles, out the window. Everything that I say I stand for, out the window. All the times that I criticize Black Lives Matter protests for getting too violent, out the window. I don't give a shit. What's most important to me is winning. So again, we're not the same, man. We're not the same. The trans community is fighting a fight that they have been fighting for generations. It is a generational trauma and torment that has been inflicted on these people. And like twice in the last 50 years, somebody like got a gun and shot some people. And it's like, oh, we'll see. And it's like, can you imagine? Can you imagine the restraint? Yeah, it's wild. Oh. Mads in the South says, it be real scary as a trans queer in Tennessee these days. I bet. That's the thing, is nobody would switch places with you. Any conservative Christian person that says, well, I'm scared now. I'm scared that the trans people might be out for blood. If you ask them, who would you rather be right now? Would you rather be you, or would you rather be a trans queer person in the South? Who would you rather be? Or just a trans queer person in America, period. Who would you rather be? Just on like how safe you would feel on a day-to-day. You wouldn't trade spots. Charles now says, I see it's time to stop influence peddling as our real number one enemy, social media fix. I don't understand what that means. earlier you said that the only way to hold politicians accountable is with social media. And now you're saying that our real number one enemy is social media. I don't know if you're being sarcastic or I maybe I'm misreading that. I don't know. Alex says, how stoked are you about the indictment? I mean, I said it earlier. I'm holding any celebration until I see more. I need to actually see something happen. Mads in the South also says, oh, and our governor is trying to expand our gun laws to make it legal for 18-year-olds. This is a common thing that conservatives will do in the wake of a mass shooting, is like as a preemptive reaction to what they know the left is going to try to once again ask for some common sense gun law reform. They'll say like, well, then we're going to loosen it. We're going to loosen it. We're going to make it even looser. And again, it just is about winning. That's all it is. So it's like, I'm not saying let's have common sense gun law reform because I'm trying to dunk on you or I'm trying to win in the culture war. I'm saying it because I'm looking for a solution to the problem. You're only saying then let's loosen it. Let's bring it down to 18 years old because you're reacting to me and saying, no, if you do, it's if you indict Trump, we'll indict Clinton. And it's like, nothing that they say has any conviction behind it. It's crazy. You don't actually have a good reason for thinking that we should lower the age. You're just like, that's my reaction to you saying we should tighten gun laws. If you want to tighten, then I'm going to loosen. Reactionary politics, says Holloman 23. It's exactly the definition of reactionary politics. You have no actual principles. You have no actual values. You just react to things. I'm going to write a whole law lowering the age of when a person can buy an AR-15 just as a reaction to people on the left saying maybe we should try to tighten those laws and put more restrictions and reform those laws so it's harder to get. I don't actually have a good argument as to why we should lower the age or loosen them. It's definitely not going to like make people safer. I can't in good conscience argue that. Doesn't matter. My value set, my mode of action is just reactionary. I'm just reacting to whatever you tell me. I just say the opposite. And again, they do it because they think that's what we do too. It's like, well, you're doing the same thing. I'm just saying the opposite of what you're saying. That's just, you're doing the same thing. That's why it doesn't matter how, you know, black people protest, because it's just reactionary. If you kneel, I don't like that. If you try to write legislation that undoes years of institutional bias, I don't like that. You know, if you try to use the proper channels, if you legally protest, if you get a permit and do a legal march in the street, I don't like that. You're shoving it down my throat. Whatever you do, I'm just, my reaction is just no, is the opposite of that. You're not on my team. And I don't like anything your team does. I can't even say sometimes like, I like the way you did that. Yeah, that was pretty good. Can't do it. Can't give you that. You're not on my team. I'm a reactionary person, and all I know how to do is just say no to whatever you say. It's just like that moment where Joe Biden at the State of the Union got all the Republicans to agree more or less to not cut Medicare by saying, like, well, some of you guys are trying to cut Medicare, and they all were like, no, we're not, you liar. And then he was like, oh, I guess then we're not cutting Medicare. And they were like, you know, it's like, that's what reactionary politics gets you. You have no actual principles. You have no actual position. Your position is just saying no. Mads again says, the reactionary politics of making drag queens illegal while expanding gun laws to keep kids safe. It's all just culture war. Making drag queens illegal points in the culture war. Lowering the gun age points in the culture war. It's just scoring points. All right. Well, I think we got it. This was a particularly long episode for just me. We did a big rundown. I'm going to go sit in my hotel's hot tub, I think. I think I've earned it. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much for hanging out. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your feedback. Really, really appreciate it. If you want to listen to the audio version of this podcast, it's going to be on Spotify or Apple Podcasts maybe later tonight, maybe early tomorrow. I'm not sure. You can also find a video version of it on YouTube. You should subscribe to my YouTube if you're not already, just in case the government decides to ban TikTok. Follow me on YouTube. Follow me on Instagram. Follow me on Twitter. And you know, check out my podcast, People Pleaser with Austin Archer. It's pretty fun. Support me on Patreon, patreon.com/AustinArcher. I love all my Patreon patrons. Shout out to all the Patreon patrons. Love you so much. Thank you so much for all of your support. Thank you for helping to keep this channel alive and to keep these shows that I do alive. Yeah, People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by looking me up on Spotify or Apple Music, Austin Archer. You can go to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, get all my tunes there. austin-archer.com is my official website, and you know, patreon.com/austinarcher. Already said it, but doesn't hurt to say it twice. Okie dokie. That's it. Love you so much. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.